Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. First up, though, I do want to bring you my editorial for the week. I think you'll enjoy this.
The wars of eternity must be kept alive at any cost. The war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners. Untrustworthy snitches lead to chemical weapons and eternal wars causing endless and needless hardship, disease, and death. The government attack on the evil ones, mostly people of color, purported to possess these weapons of mass destruction, which threaten our very society. Freedoms supposedly fought for are eroded, denied, and held in abeyance till that magical day when all druggies, terrorists, and evil ones are dead, and nobody will ever again use drugs or make a chemical compound not approved by the president. Then we will once again ring the bell of liberty for all.
Okay, I think you get my drift for the week. I think it's an outrage, the mechanisms of this drug war and the fact that so many people are incarcerated for basically no crime whatsoever. I hope you were able to look at this Sunday's Houston Chronicle. Turns out that we are losing the war in Afghanistan because of our policy regarding heroin and how it is now funding the Taliban and resupplying the warlords with plenty of weapons. And in looking at that situation, you know, it occurred to me we need to provide more coverage for that. And therefore, I contacted a good friend up Pittsburgh way, and here's our first look at this war on opium.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Sunday Houston Chronicle reports, Afghani opium is now the source of 70% of the world's heroin. Last year, Afghan drug farmers and traffickers earned $2.3 billion, an amount equal to half the nation's gross domestic product. According to NPR's February 2004 special report on heroin in America, heroin can now be purchased for about $4 a dose and the purity averages 80 or 90%. By the way, that's a tenfold decrease in price since the 70s, while purity has increased dramatically. Poppy cultivation in Afghanistan is now 36 times higher than in the last year of rule by the Taliban, according to White House figures released November 28, 2003. In February 2003, the Pittsburgh Tribune Review reports sadly, the local death toll from heroin overdose doubled between 2000 and 2002, and that shockingly, the price for a single dose of heroin had fallen to $3. Last week, the Pakistan Newswire informed us that the head of the United Nations Office of Drug Control, Antonio Maria Costa, believes the Afghani opium smugglers are taxed by the Taliban at a rate of between 13 and 15% of their load. And finally, on Wednesday, June 15, 2004, former White House drug policy spokesman Robert Weiner contended, we have effectively become silent partners of the Afghani opium warlord. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that first installment of Poppygate, and we're going to try to do that every week, maybe include one in one of our 420 reports as well. But I am proud to say we have our guest online, and as I said, he is Robert Melamed, Ph.D., Associate Professor, and Chairman of the Biology Department at the University of Colorado. Robert, are you with us?
Yes, I am. You hear me all right?
I do indeed, sir. Welcome to Cultural Baggage.
My pleasure.
Yes, sir. There's much to talk about, and I think we should just jump right into it. If you would kind of summarize the work you do for my listeners.
Well, what I'm involved with is really studying how cells live and die and how cannabis impacts on that. And really, it turns out that over the past few years, what we've discovered, and I don't mean me in this case, I mean scientists all over the world who are working, doing cannabis-related research, what they've discovered, and this is quite shocking, but absolutely true, is that we all make marijuana-like compounds, and that's why marijuana has so many different effects, not only in terms of, say, recreational use, but in terms of medicinal use, because it turns out that the marijuana we make in our bodies winds up controlling literally everything in our body, meaning our immune system, digestive system, nervous system, reproductive system, musculoskeletal system, you name it, and the endocannabinoids, as they're called, they wind up regulating and balancing those activities in our bodies.
Yes, sir, it's quite amazing when you get right down to that diversity, that level of involvement. I understand you're also involved in pointing out the harm reduction aspects of marijuana for certain maladies and systems in our body. Just talk on that, if you will.
Yeah, well, it turns out that, you know, what really is disease? And it turns out that we have, of course, genetic diseases, people who are born with various things that are not working properly because of their genetics. We get diseases because we can have infections from numerous parasites, microorganisms, viruses, and we have what falls under a general category of age-related diseases. And aging in general is thought to be related to the fact that as we breathe oxygen and as we burn the food that we eat, we wind up producing free radicals. And free radicals are very reactive chemicals that in turn react with things and change things in our bodies, in our cells, and in, you know, in our bodies in general. And these compounds, I view them really as the friction of life. They're unavoidable, as is friction. And what we want to do is we want to reduce the harm caused by friction. And in a very quick summary, essentially, what I've come to believe is that the cannabinoids that we make and the cannabinoids that we take in through marijuana are basically the oil that helps counteract a lot of the damage caused by frictions, by preventing it from happening or preventing it from building up and getting worse.
Yes, Dr. Melamed, I want to ask you, you have focused quite considerable effort on the cannabinoid systems, and this is available in marijuana. Does the Marinol pill enter into that, or some of these other treatments that are coming on the market, such as the vaporizer or the under-the-tongue spray?
Well, there's a host of things going on here. In the plants, there are about 60 or 80 different cannabinoids, as they're known. And what we mean by cannabinoids are marijuana-like compounds. It's not exactly the same as THC, but they work on in the same manner. They work on THC receptors, which are part of how cells communicate with one another on a chemical level. So that when we take in external cannabinoids in the form of THC or a whole variety of synthetics that are made at this point, since all the drug companies have now discovered that cannabinoids are doing a lot of the things that they're trying to do, they've become very interested, but of course they cannot patent the plant. So they've developed synthetics. And there's been a lot of research that's resulted from these synthetics that is very valuable for us to now understand how marijuana has such important medicinal properties. Now, with respect to Marinol, that is one single compound. It's THC in sesame oil. And the problem with that is a lot of the cannabinoids that are in the plant have a diversity of effects. Some of them balance out some of the negative effects of others. And for example, THC itself, while it has pain relieving properties, it has the psychoactive activities that are so important recreationally, but they also have anxiety promoting effects, whereas a lot of the other compounds that are in cannabis in the plants, they balance out that negative effect of, say, anxiety. So we see that there's a much more potential benefit coming from using plant extracts rather than using the synthetic, it's a semi-synthetic, the THC that they produce, which mimics what's in the plant. In addition, cannabinoids, all of them, are very, very fat soluble. They don't like water. We know oil and water don't mix, right?
Yes.
So what happens is you take this pill and it goes into your stomach, and where we are largely aqueous, we're largely water, and they don't get very readily absorbed. So what you have happening is a very irreproducible absorption rate, and a very irreproducible effect. You know, sometimes somebody might get way too stoned, and another time they might not have any effect, and sometimes it might take an hour to affect them, sometimes it might take 2 hours to affect them. So this is obviously not the solution for somebody who's in pain or who's having acute nausea as a result of chemotherapy or even just thinking about going to chemotherapy. What you'd like is something that would be rapidly acting and which they could titrate the dose. In other words, they could take just the amount that they need. So if that to occur, you'd like it to be very rapidly acting, and that's what occurs when someone smokes it. So now, because there are so many medicinal users around the world at this point, they wanted to address the issue, because most people, who especially someone who's sick, is concerned about their health, and they're not interested in taking something that's going to harm them in other ways, even though it may be benefiting them in some ways. So as a result of that, we have two new avenues of approach that have occurred. One is there's a pharmaceutical company called Guy Pharmaceutical, GW Pharmaceutical, that's in Britain, that's growing huge, huge multi-acre greenhouse marijuana plantations, essentially, where they're making extracts that are very highly reproducible. They have a couple of different strains that are differently balanced in these endocannabinoids, and these are undergoing clinical trials right now in Britain for things like pain relief and for multiple sclerosis and a whole variety of diseases, because remember, since this impacts on so many different body systems, there's potential therapeutic applications for diseases associated with all of these different body systems. So what they're developing are a variety of oral routes, under the tongue sprays, inhalers, etc., that would give rapid action and yet eliminate the need for the taking in the toxic compounds that go along with smoking things. Smoking anything is not what your lungs are designed for. So while smoking has the benefit of rapid action, and self-titration by virtue of that rapid action, it has the negative consequence that you're inhaling, you know, carcinogens, like if you were smoking tobacco, for example. So you don't want to do that. And now, as an alternative, what's been developed and become quite popular, especially in California, I've seen them just really exploding in use in the various medicinal clubs that are out there, are things called vaporizers. And what these are controlled heating units that vaporize, literally vaporize the marijuana without burning it. In other words, because they have a temperature control, they just bring the plant material up to a temperature that basically evaporates the active ingredients, because these oils evaporate way below the burning temperature of the plant material. And these are then, you know, ingested into the lungs, or brought in, inhaled into the lungs by a variety of different means. The most popular, most effective one that I've seen is certainly something called the Volcano, which comes out of Germany, and unfortunately is very highly priced. It's over $500. But in these clubs, they're vaporizing 24 hours a day for sick people. They're turned on. People go in and are able to inhale through a valve that is attached to a bag that fills up with these vapors, and you just inhale the vapors that way. So there's no burning, there's no irritation in the throat or the lungs, and more importantly, there's no carcinogens and, you know, negative byproducts of smoke that come in. It's just really the active ingredients that are evaporated and inhaled. Very, very effective, and allow, again, for the titration, so that most people don't want to get too stoned, you know. They want, especially sick people, they want relief from their suffering, and that's about it. Most of them are not interested in having psychological effects. They're searching for relief because they're suffering.
Thank you, sir. I tell you what, I knew you were the guy to answer many of these questions that the listeners have asked me, and we're going to take just a little break. Steph Scherer has managed to get here through the Houston traffic, and we're glad to have her with us. And when we come back, she'll have a question for you, Dr. Melamed. All right, thank you, sir.
Okay.
Hi, it's Mark Emery, Canada's Prince of Pot. You're listening to the Drug Truth Network.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its Side Effects. Confusion, anxiety, fatigue, tingling in the fingers, blurred vision, loss of consciousness, excessive phlegm, brown urine, unusual bleeding, nausea, and vomiting. Time's up. The answer, Glipizide for diabetics. Another FDA-approved product.
I'd been smoking pot for quite a while before I met Chuck. I guess he was what the newspapers call a peddler. He supplied the kids at school with whatever they wanted. Most of them used reefers like us, but some liked stronger things. There was something intriguing and different about Chuck. I guess I appealed to him in some way, too. Anyway, I found out later what it was about him. He had the heroin habit. He was hooked.
I mean, it is such a triumph of fear and ignorance over fact and logic that the drug that kills nobody is the illegal one. How would you explain that to an alien who came down?
Okay, once again, you are listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Proof Network and Pacifica Radio. We have in studio Steph Scherer. We have on the phone Dr. Robert Melamede out of the University of Colorado. And quick program note, I want to thank KHLY 107 FM from Malaspina, British Columbia, for joining the Drug Truth Network. That makes 11, and I thank every one of you out there for being part of our endeavors. And I want to say hi to Alex up at the East Ham unit. Steph, welcome to Cultural Baggage.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
Yes, well, I want to learn more about Americans for Safe Access, your organization, here in a little bit. But do you have a question for Dr. Melamede?
Yeah, I actually have a two-part question. And this is something that patients and activists around the country often ask me, and I'm hoping you can answer these two questions. One is, how can GW Pharmaceutical patent their products if the compounds are in the public domain? And secondly, is how will GW Pharmaceutical's product affect medical marijuana policy in the U.S.?
Well, what they can patent are the strains that they're using, the extraction techniques, the methods of growing. There's a whole variety of accessory technology that goes with what they're doing that allows them to patent it and allows them to have investors willing to spend the money necessary for them to go through the very costly regulatory processes and to develop a highly reproducible medicine. A lot of people are very concerned that what they get is something that is approved by governmental agencies, and in order for that to occur, it's got to be tested, and you got to know that what you test today is what you produce and then sell and administer to people tomorrow and a year from now so that they can rely on it. So for the people who for whom that's a concern, and certainly government regulatory agencies are extremely concerned with that, this provides them a means of accomplishing that very important task. Now, how that's going to impact on the United States is that Guy Pharmaceuticals, GW Pharmaceuticals, is spending a lot of money, investors' money, going through clinical trials, doing research, to prove in a scientifically demonstrable manner the efficacy of these, of the drugs that they are producing and the methods that they are producing for administering these drugs, so that eventually those truths that will come out of that will be in the scientific record and will be very difficult, more difficult for the United States policymakers to continue to ignore. Once you start having people throughout Europe and potentially in Canada, which now has applications from Guy to use the drugs there, once you have people benefiting from it and it becomes documented, then people who have those diseases and they find out that there's a safe, effective medicine available, they're going to demand that. So eventually I feel that the truth and the medicine is going to drive the end of the ignorance that is so pervasive in this country.
Thank you, Dr. Melamede. I want to ask you something here. Now, every time that there's a new law being presented in the state house or in Congress, they always talk about the need for another study. And yet, have there not been thousands of studies already done? Does not history show us that it's a safe and effective medicine?
It is. You know, but anything has potential drawbacks to it. And that's true of marijuana as well. As safe as it is, and certainly it's extremely safe in terms of, say, causing direct lethality. You could never consume enough cannabis to kill yourself. The the last way you'd want to kill yourself. You could never accomplish. You'd have to eat a couple of pounds of it, you know. So it's very safe from that point of view. But I want to point out some of the potential negatives, because, and mind you that I'm 100% in favor of its medicinal use. I think it's got incredible value for numerous diseases. But I want to be somewhat fair and present negative effects, because sadly these are not the negative effects that are often presented by the government. And I'm going to use a very poignant example of that. So, you know, today in America, where we have good sanitation, public health, etc., most people are dying from age-related diseases, often of which they foster by their lifestyle. We have heart disease, cardiovascular disease in general. We have neurological deterioration, Alzheimer's, etc. We have autoimmune diseases. Arthritis, multiple sclerosis, Crohn's disease, diabetes. So we have a whole host of what's known as age-related diseases whose etiology, whose origins are thought to be due to free radical accumulated damages. Well, cannabis is extremely important in preventing and minimizing those diseases. Yet, on the other hand, you go back 100 years in this country and people were dying whole variety of infectious diseases. And those infectious diseases require a particular immune response. Now, it turns out that everything in life, but let's look just at the immune system for a moment, is a balance of opposing forces. And in our immune system, we use free radicals to kill invading pathogens. On the other hand, we have an anti-inflammatory, an anti-free radical arm to the immune system that minimizes some of the damages that are caused by free radicals. And it's a balancing act. And as we get older and accumulate these damages, we have these free radical damages causing age-related diseases. On the other hand, if you get a certain kinds of infections, you really need that pro-inflammatory, free radical-producing arm of the immune system to best fight those diseases. So a number of diseases, including tuberculosis, Legionella's disease, Leishmania, would be very harmed by using cannabis. So a case in point now that I think very dramatically illustrates pros and cons. We have our soldiers, regardless of your opinions, right or wrong, in Iraq. And I think everybody supports the soldiers, whether they support us being there or not. Well, they're being bitten by a sandfly that carries a parasite-caused leishmania. And that leishmania requires the inflammatory free radical production in order to best combat that disease. And in mouse experiments, if you give mice cannabinoids, and I think THC was used, the mice that are exposed to THC and to leishmania die because the infection basically explodes, whereas those that did not receive THC are able to control the infection. So in that case, cannabis use would be very detrimental. Now, on the other hand, again, regarding our soldiers, if they were exposed to nerve gas, what has been shown is that cannabis is very protective against the nerve damage that occurs as a result of nerve gas. So here we have the drug, when used in the correct manner, can protect our soldiers, and used in an incorrect manner, could harm our soldiers.
It is a quandary, yes, sir. Speaking of nerve damage, I wanted to address that point a little bit. I've heard that there have been studies done in Israel and perhaps other countries that, in fact, it's packed as an emergency kit for those who might be in an area where nerve gas is used.
You know, I'm not familiar with them actually going to that extent yet with it, but there's an Israeli company called Pharmos, which has done the research with some synthetics that they've produced and patented. And what they've shown is that in mice that are exposed to nerve gas sarin, they can, if they're administered within 5 minutes after exposure, that they can protect 87% of the nerves that would otherwise die. And even if they are given the cannabinoids within 45 minutes of exposure, they're able to protect 80% of the nerves that would otherwise die. So it's potentially very profound. And what we're looking at here is kind of how we started out part of this conversation, that cannabinoids can regulate the life and death of cells.
Well, now, Dr. Melamed, Steph Scherer again from Americans for Safe Access. That's on the web at ASA.org.
SafeAccessNow.org.
I'm sorry. SafeAccessNow.org. And you can learn much there about their efforts on a national basis to educate people and get them involved. Do you have another question for Dr. Melamed?
Yeah, I just have one more, and that is, a lot of people ask, and I hear a lot of people discuss this idea of where marijuana should be regulated in the United States, and that is, should it be looked at as an herbal plant like St. John's wort, or should it be put in the pharmacopoeia or in pharmacies? And I guess it goes. The reason I thought of this question for you is that, looking at the FDA and why it has to regulate drugs, it's usually to keep people from harming themselves from a product. And so there's an argument to be made for the fact that if you cannot die from marijuana use, then it shouldn't be put in the category of vitamin C and nutmeg and other herbs.
Well, I would, I'm a firm believer in freedom. So freedom and education. So what I would say is it should be freely available. People can grow it. It's their business if they want to grow it or not, especially if they're growing it in their home, not selling it to kids. Whose business is it? On the other hand, I can see a role for the regulatory agencies, because some people would prefer that the pharmaceuticals that they use go through that route. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you choose. I mean, that's what freedom's about. So I would say there's nothing wrong with either of those approaches, and that we should have both of those options as free, intelligent people living in a democracy. If you feel you want your drugs to be FDA approved, fine. But let's keep in mind that there are over 100,000 people a year who are dying from FDA approved drugs. That the studies that are done in order to get a drug on the market addresses a very small subset. Typically, you're dealing with white males. And yet you're giving the drugs to, say, black children. We don't have the kind, FDA approval does not give the security and safety that people would like to believe it in fact does. Certainly it's protected us from things like thalidomide, which has been very valuable. But the drugs that are on the market have tremendous side effects for the most part. Very few of them are in general as safe as cannabis. And many of them are not as effective as cannabis. They may be very effective for a subset of the people using them. And that's going to be true for cannabis as well. You have people, for example, with migraines. And I've seen marijuana be very effective for some people with migraine headaches. And I've seen marijuana make the headaches worse for others.
Dr. Melamed. Wait, Steve tells me we have 1 minute left, and I wanted to give you a 10 seconds, if you will, to point people on the net where you think they could learn more.
Punch in marijuana into any search engine, and you can find more. If you go to my site at uccs.edu, but people should read widely. If you want to get abstracts of scientific articles, go to PubMed.
All right, so we will have to leave it there. Dr. Melamed, we're going to have to bring you back. There's still much we need to discuss. Steph Scherer, one more time, where can they learn more from Americans for Safe Access?
At safeaccessnow.org on the web.
As always, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, and I urge you,
for
please
the drug
be careful.
Woman. And on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston.